The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Brent Nachtigall, Middle East correspondent for thetrumpet.com. Stephen Fleury should be back with you on Monday. Well, instead of being in Jerusalem today, I'm coming to you to you from the Ed Stone studio of Herbert W. Armstrong College here in the UK this Friday, February 10th. And this is a very important day if you are Iranian. Well, at least for the Iranians that support the Islamic Revolution. Today in Iran, people are celebrating. And what are they celebrating? The anniversary of the establishment of the 1979 Islamic takeover of the country, the time when the country became an Islamic state. Really, that's what it is. And how are they celebrating it? They're celebrating it by calling for your death. They're calling for your death if you're in the United States, if you're in Israel, if you're in Britain, by extension, if you're in the West. That's what these hundreds of thousands of people are marching about. They're using today to commemorate their freedom from the shackles of democracy, from the curse of free speech, from freedom of religion, from all of those things. They're happy with those freedoms, from those freedoms that now exist for them. This is what the Jerusalem Post said and wrote about that just today. Quote from the Jerusalem Post now, hundreds of thousands of Iranians rallied on Friday to swear allegiance. Hundreds of thousands of Iranians rallied on Friday to swear allegiance to the clerical establishment, following, of course, United States President Donald Trump's warning that he had put the Islamic Republic on notice. You remember that? That happened after the ballistic missile tests late last week or earlier last week. And he said, Iran's on notice. You better watch out. Don't do that again. Well, the Ayatollah Khamenei, he called for Iranians to protest in the streets today to show the United States, and especially the new leadership in the United States, that they're not scared. This is what a young Iranian man told state TV, according to the Jerusalem Post. He said, "We are ready to sacrifice our lives for our leader. America and Trump cannot do a thing," with a word missing. Now, there was a speech given in Iran as well, and that was at the Azadi Square, or Freedom Square, as it's called. And that speech was given by so-called moderate Rouhani, that was meant to not be a hardliner, that was meant to be, at least during President Obama's term in office, the great solution to bringing Iran back into the world stage, into the world community. And he said this, "Some inexperienced figures in the region and America are threatening Iran. They should know that the language of threats has never worked with Iran. They should learn to respect Iran and Iranians. We will strongly confront any warmongering policies." Now, it remains to be seen what that will be, whether the Trump administration will strike militarily at Iran, whether they'll pull out of the nuclear deal, whether they'll do something else, a deal with Russia to maybe lessen Iran's power through the Middle East. But they are at least standing rhetorically up to Mr. Trump. The Iranians, that is. The Jerusalem Post article continues, "The Tehran ceremony was rife with anti-US and anti-Israeli sentiment. Some people carried pictures of Trump, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and British Prime Minister Theresa May, captioned, 'Death to the Devil Triangle.'" That's how they feel about your governments, at least for a lot of our listeners. Then, interestingly enough, they also thanked Americans for opposing Trump's executive order banning entry to the United States to travelers from seven mainly Muslim countries, including Iran. And that's interesting. That's interesting that the Iranians were rejoicing about that. That they, Trump's decree, his executive order to ensure that from these seven countries that there is going to be a 3-month temporary ban on people coming in so that they can look at the vetting processes from these dangerous countries. They thanked the American people or those judges that struck that down. It's interesting because just before they went to the streets, that's what happened, as you heard in Top of the Hour News. Three federal judges unanimously upheld the decision from the previous court to slam the brakes on that refugee and immigration ban. This is the ruling, of course, by the Ninth Circuit. Three judges that said that the government has pointed to no evidence. This is in their defense of their decision. The government has pointed to no evidence that an alien of the countries named in the order that has perpetrated a terrorist attack, that an alien of the countries named in the order has perpetrated a terrorist attack in the United States. Rather than present evidence to explain the need for the executive order, the government has taken the position that we must not review its decision at all, and we disagree. Then, as you heard again on the Top of the Hour News, Trump responded in all caps on Twitter, "See you in court. The security of our nation is at stake." In the meantime, refugees are streaming into the United States. This is a Washington Times piece from yesterday. It says this, quote, "The State Department has more than doubled the rate of refugees from Iraq, Syria, and other suspect countries in the week since the federal judge's reprieve in what analysis said appears to be a push to admit as many people as possible before another court puts the program back on ice." Listen to this part. "A staggering 77% of the 1,100 refugees let in since Judge James L. Robart's February 3rd order have been from the seven suspect countries." So they saw that this judge said, "No, you can't do that, Mr. Trump." And then the gates were opened. And then the refugees, so-called, and some of them definitely are, I'm sure, but the number of refugees increased dramatically. Nearly a third of those are from Syria alone. Another 21% are from Iraq. By contrast, in the 2 weeks before Judge Robart's order, just 9% of the refugees were from Syria and 6 were from Iraq. So in the meantime, the refugees are streaming into the United States. And this was the precise reason that there was the kerfuffle in the rollout of this immigration ban, is that Mr. Trump, he says, didn't want to give any warning to these nations or terrorists, apparently, in these nations, because they would use the time from the decision to impose the order and from when the order would come into effect to flood into the country. So it was rolled out in a rushed manner, stopped in a way, really, that people have said was bad, and even some of the government officials have admitted. But at the same time, it didn't give any warning. Well, now, the precise thing is happening which Mr. Trump warned of. That because it's in flux, the refugees, whether they're going to be allowed in or not in the future, now they're coming. They're coming in droves. And these refugees, again, are from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Sudan, Somalia, Libya, and Yemen, all countries that at some point have been shouting in the streets also, "Death to America, death to Israel." So what type of candidates do we have coming into the United States now for relocation? Well, let's hear from the leader of Syria himself. This is Bashar al-Assad in an exclusive interview with Yahoo News at the presidential office in the capital of Syria, Damascus, which was published yesterday.
As you know, President Trump has signed a very controversial executive order barring refugees, immigrants from predominantly Muslim countries, but specifically all Syrian refugees, saying that their entry into the country would be detrimental to the interests of the United States. The premise is that some of them are terrorists.
Yeah.
Do you agree with President Trump on this?
This question has two aspects. The first one is American. This is American issue, and it's related to the sovereignty of the American nation. Every country has the right to put any regulations to enter their country. We can disagree and or agree. But if you ask me, as president, as official in Syria, the Syrian state, my responsibility not to go and ask any president to allow the Syrians to go there and to have refuge in that country. My responsibility is to restore the stability in order to bring them back to Syria and find refuge in their country. So I'm not going to discuss that this is right or wrong. This is an American issue.
But the question was, are some of these refugees, in your view, aligned with terrorists?
Oh, definitely.
And, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You can find it on the net. The same picture that you saw them in some cases, of course, in some instances, those terrorists in Syria holding the machine gun or killing people, they are peaceful refugees in Europe or in the West in general. Yeah, that's true.
Definitely. Yes, 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 definitely. Some of these people are terrorists. Now, sure, Assad's definition of a terrorist is anyone fighting against him. So it's probably a little bit different than the definition of Mr. Trump or Americans on who's a terrorist. But he's right. He's right in the sense that one day you see photos of these men fighting in Syria holding an AK-47. Then a few months later, they show up in Europe as a peace-loving refugee.
So how many terrorists do you believe are among the 4.8 million Syrian refugees?
No one has any number. Nobody knows.
Do you believe it's a significant number?
Because nobody knows all the terrorists to give a percentage. No one at all.
Do you believe it's a significant number?
It's not about significant, because you don't need significant number to commit atrocities. 11th of September, it happened by only 15 terrorists out of maybe millions of immigrants in the United States. So it's not about the number. It's about the quality. It's about the intentions.
So he says many are coming in. Definitely terrorists are among those that are coming into Europe and possibly the United States. And he's right as well. I hate to agree with the slaughterer, really, that Assad is, but it doesn't take a large number of terrorists. It's the quality, as he said, of the terrorist that is important. And most of these people that are coming into the United States, they're from Syria. And you can bet now that the Ninth Circuit has not allowed this executive order from Mr. Trump to go forward, and that before it gets to the Supreme Court, you're going to see this stream of refugees come even faster into the country. Well, we're going to take a short break, but please stay tuned, because when we come back, we're going to stay with Syria, still talk about Assad. We're going to make sense of what's happening in Syria for you. I'm writing an article right now that'll hopefully appear on thetrumpet.com today or perhaps Monday with the working title, Get Ready for Drastic Change in Syria. And I'm sorry, Mr. Assad, it's probably going to affect you. You'll see what we're going to be talking about. I'll give you a little bit of insight into this article when we return. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Now, when you hear about the Syrian civil war, I understand that many people tune out because it's such a complex situation. Well, give me 5 minutes, and I'd like to hopefully distill with you exactly what has been happening over the 4 years in Syria and how it affects the entire world. Bold claim? Give me 5 minutes. Really, in the simplest form, a civil war normally does involve a significant part of a nation's populace rising up against the ruling authority. And usually this starts in a nonviolent way through protests, through civil strife. And that's as it happened in Syria during the Arab Spring back in 2012. This is the genesis of what we're seeing still play out in Syria in 2017. It started in 2012. Well, generally, the government then, if it's facing this, has a choice, either reach some sort of accommodation with the protesters, or as in the case of Bashar al-Assad and his regime in Syria, don't give an inch, stamp out the movement as quickly and viciously as possible before it grows. And sometimes those brutal tactics, they prevent a civil war. But sometimes they don't. And in Syria's case, the Assad regime likely probably failed to recognize initially just how many Syrians were willing to fight him for change. Instead of quelling the movement, Assad's brutal tactics only further mobilized the masses to violently overthrow that government. And that's how the civil war began. And if it stayed that simple, it's likely that the Syrian civil war would have ended years ago, with Bashar al-Assad gone from power, with some sort of new Sunni-led Syrian government set up in its place, if it was as simple as that. Yet that's not what happened. The war still rages today. Why is that? As this war enters its sixth year, around 500,000 people are dead. Almost 5 million refugees have fled the country. 10 million people are internally displaced. And there's reason to believe that the war is still far from over. Now, the reason that the Syrian civil war is still going on and that it breaks the cookie-cutter model is that the Syrian civil war largely turned into a proxy war for outside nations. Many of these nations are using the war to further their own national ambitions. Nations such as Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Russia now, and the United States as well. They have at different times throughout the war either supported the rebels or supported the Assad regime, whether it be through arms, finances, or any type of diplomatic maneuvering. Now, in 2012, under increased pressure from the swelling ranks of the rebels, Assad called its chief backer, Iran, for assistance. They said, Assad said, I can't handle it. I can't fight back these protesters, these rebels. Tehran then, as the capital of Iran, quickly tapped its other proxy in Hezbollah next door in the nation of Lebanon to join the fight to even the odds. Saudi Arabia then it increased its supply of armaments and funding for the numerous Sunni rebel groups, the rebels that were fighting against Assad. Many foreign fighters also entered Syria at that time, right under the nose of Turkey, who had its long-standing desire to see Assad's departure. And then for its part, the United States gave unreliable support to some of the rebel groups, but really couldn't do too much, as if they did give more support, it would have upset the Iranians, whom the United States was trying to work with a nuclear deal. This is how it went for a number of years, these foreign powers each supporting different sides in the Syrian civil war. But then we fast forward to 2015, and Assad, with Iran directing things, they had their backs against the wall. They were going to lose in 2015. If something didn't change in 2015, it's very likely that Assad would have been gone by now. Well, what did they do? They realized they need serious help, so Iran covertly flew the leader of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Commander Qassem Soleimani, to Moscow. He, of course, it was illegal for him to travel to Moscow as part of a United Nations Security Council resolution that Russia's a part of, but they accepted him in Moscow. What was he doing there? He was pleading for Putin's assistance. Now, recognizing the impact to his own strategic interests in the Middle East, which include Russia's naval port on the Mediterranean coast, Russia obliged Iran. It joined the Syria fray back in September 2015. Russian aircraft then provided the powerful and essential aerial support to the Syrian regime that was now also supported by 40,000 Iranian paid Shiite mercenaries. and those came from Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq. So while we're talking about a civil war in Syria, we need to understand that so many nations are involved and each want a piece of the pie. Now, from the Iranian perspective, the Russian entrance to the war paid off immediately. The lethal tandem of Russian jets in the skies combined with Iran's proxies on the ground halted the push of the rebels. Key territories were taken back, ensuring the survival of the Syrian regime. At last, Iran felt that Assad would remain in power and allow Iran to continue its hold over that territory. Now, the last major objective for the Russian and the Iranian alliance was Aleppo. Everyone knows about Aleppo. This was late last year when Aleppo was being besieged. This is one of the largest, or the largest, pre-war city in Syria. And it was the last major objective of the Russians. They felt that if Aleppo was taken, then the Syrian regime would be assured. And it was happy at that point to cut a deal with the rebels once Aleppo fell. And that happened. Aleppo fell. But at that time, we saw cracks in the Iranian and the Russian relationship. Now, why is this? This is the point at which it got dicey. Because with the fall of Aleppo, with the Syrian regime likely preserved, we see that Russia and Iran have divergent interests. Now, this is really important. I just took a couple of minutes there, maybe five. Maybe it was more than the five I promised. But that's where we sit right now. A Russian ally that was brought in to help Iran maintain its own power inside the nation to assure that Russia could keep its naval base there, but also increase its presence in the Middle East. Now, with its objective largely accomplished, we have what always happens. When two nations come together with an alliance of convenience and they fight against a third power. In this case, Russia and Iran came together to fight against the Syrian rebels in order to preserve the state. They both needed the state to be preserved. Now that the rebels are largely defeated from the most vital territories in Syria, the question has become, who gets Syria? Now, the Syrian regime and Assad, he doesn't want to be a proxy to neither of them. But the fact remains that he's going to be a proxy to one of them. Now, up until 2005, it was the Russians that actually supported the Syrian regime. The Iranians weren't there yet. Then, for the past decade, it's been the Iranians that are in charge and dominate the Syrian regime. Well, now you have both the Iranians and the Russians there, and you can bet both of them want to control the Syrian regime going forward. Bible prophecy says, and we have been saying this for the past decade, that Iran is not going to control Syria. However, we didn't know how that was going to happen. Now, with Russia in there, and that was from Iran's bidding, we can see how Iran might fall out of controlling Syria. This is big. This is Bible prophecy. This is a prophecy, as we'll get to later, that was made 2,700, 800 years ago. And this is one that we said was going to happen 20 years ago, that Syria was going to fall out of the Iranian orbit. We didn't know how that happened, how that would happen. And yet, with Russia's entrance into the Syrian civil war, now that Assad is stabilized, we're beginning to see glimpses of how this could happen. Are the Russians going to force the Syrians out of the Iranian orbit? Well, that's just what it looks like. Now, I've got a couple of articles that I'm going to discuss that discuss this from the past week. But as an FYI, we said that Russia was likely going to do this almost a year ago. That Russia's entrance and then Turkey's entrance into the Syrian civil war with their armies was going to squeeze Iran out of Syria. At the time, nobody. Go back, do a Google search, so you can go up there and go into the little filters and set the terms of your search and see if anyone was saying that Russia was going to squeeze Iran out of Syria a year ago. You'll find a couple articles, but they're written by thetrumpet.com. Now, in the past week, there were two. This first one was from Tuesday, and it was from War is Boring. Though this is highly speculative, it is interesting nevertheless. It's entitled, Iran and Russia are apparently fighting each other in Syria. This is by Tom Cooper. He writes this, between January 23rd and 27, 2017, there were reports that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad had suffered a stroke and had to be hospitalized. The usually pro-Assad British newspaper, The Independent, claimed that the Syrian president was suffering serious psychological strain. Allegations of the president's poor health take on extra significance in a Russian proxy state. During the Cold War, the Soviets frequently cited Allied leaders' purported medical and psychological problems when launching military interventions, takeovers, essentially, in the countries of the supposedly ailing heads of state. Did the same thing just happen in Syria, it says? Was there an attempted takeover of Syria by one of Syria's paymasters, Syria or Iran? The article continues, on January 28th, there were reports that Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps militia had tried to depose al-Assad and replace him with his brother, and that Russian forces had thwarted the attempted coup by blocking Iranian agents in 11 Damascus districts and at the strategic Al-Maza Air Base. The maneuvering reportedly occurred amid a schism within Syria's ruling Alawite community between pro-Russian and pro-Iranian elements. Now, we haven't heard much about this. You likely haven't heard much about this. A coup by the Iranians to put a guy in power that they want in power because they're scared of the pro-Russian elements inside the Syrian regime. This crisis, though, this is War is Boring Again, says, this crisis seemed to pass 2 days later when the regime announced that President Assad is in excellent health. Then they write, to be clear, the evidence of an attempted Iranian coup in Syria and a Russian counter coup is thin, but then evidence of internal politics in Damascus is always thin. That said, it's no secret on their arrival in Syria in August and September 2015, Russian officials found the regime and its military in a state of complete disorder and unable to continue the war on their own. Then it says, in rescuing al-Assad's regime from collapse, the Russians preferred to deal with state institutions. But the regime was so weak that Russians had no choice but to work with al-Assad's non-state allies, such as Hezbollah militias, including all the Iranian people that were in there. So it's saying that the Russians would have rather used the military of Syria, but it was in such a dilapidated state that they had to accept the help of the Iranian-backed proxies and militias. They had to fight together. Then it continues. It talks about how the Russians effectively organized the ground force in the taking of Aleppo, taking the lead even from Iran. It was really the first sign that we saw, that we could witness, that Russia was actually taking over from Iran in the leadership inside Syria, was the taking of Aleppo. And then the article continues, Russia's consolidation of power in Syria surely startled Iranian agents within the country. While the IRGC, or the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, is largely in favor of Russian intervention in Syria, Russian and Iranian methods in the country are not entirely compatible. Russia's success in the country can be Iran's loss. It can be Iran's loss. They both can't continue together. These are power-hungry regimes. The Iranian regime marching across the Middle East, it wants to hold on to Syria. If it's going to get towards the Mediterranean, which is its goal, it needs Syria so that it can transport troops across land, weaponry across land, to get to Hezbollah in the south of Lebanon and then access the Mediterranean. It needs it. But Russia wants it too. And Russia and Putin, as we've learned over the past 6, 7, 8 months, is not going to play second fiddle to anybody. This is how the article from War is Boring continues or concludes. It says, for now, the status quo reigns in Syria. If indeed the IRGC did attempt to replace Bashar al-Assad in late January, it clearly failed. But that doesn't mean the regime is safe and secure in its current form. Syria still relies on two foreign allies, and those allies still don't get along with each other. Now, this is amazing. They're not friends, people. Yes, they have a temporary alliance. They needed one another, Russia and Iran. But now that the threat that their interests, as far as it goes by Assad staying in power, is gone, or the Syrian regime staying in power is gone, they're going to turn on each other. And Bible prophecy says, we definitely know that Iran is going to lose out. This is another article from Wednesday. This is from Defense One. It's written by Frederick C. Hoff. It's entitled Russia and Iran Split Over Syria. It starts this way. Diplomatic activism by Russia in Syria is producing speculation about the Kremlin's possible willingness to encourage genuine peace talks and spur transition from corrupt, incompetent, and brutal family rule towards something stabilizing and inclusive. If Russia proves genuinely interest in converting military success to a sustainable political settlement, it would put Moscow sharply at odds with Iran and the regime of the Syrian President Bashar Assad. Is Russian President Vladimir Putin truly prepared to turn a page in Syria? The litmus test will be Moscow's view of whether or not Assad's rule should be restored to areas eventually liberated from the Islamic State group, it goes on to write. Then it says, having saved Assad from all but declared military victory, Russia may be asking itself now if Assad is a liability for its longer-term interest in Syria, and it would be an apt question, it asks. And this article goes on to explain how, while I've talked about Putin being there to sustain the Syrian regime to ensure it continues, I use the word regime. I don't use the word Assad, because I'm sure Putin would be fine with Assad if Assad was going to be his man. But Assad has proven to be Iran's man. So you've got Iran backing the leader and the Syrian institutions really not too worried who the leader is. And Russia would rather sideline Assad and put its own person in power. That's what we're seeing here. This is how it continues, or close to the end, it writes this. So Russia and Iran may have conflicting views about the future of Assad, but do they really? Like, it is just coming in, like we're witnessing this right now for the first time over the past couple of months. And as it said previously, things out of Damascus are very obscure, and we don't really know what's happening until it's happened. Would Russia actually be willing and able to neutralize Iran's toxic presence in Syria by getting the Shia militias out and then marginalizing the polarizing Assad clique? If Russia is able and willing to do so, clearly it would be for its own interest. A stable, unified Syria, closely aligned with Moscow, a place that can attract the reconstruction investment and assistance so sorely needed. Then it goes on to talk about how even Trump might do a deal with Putin to help defeat ISIS. And then if that happens, then at the same time, the Russians would likely receive support from the Trump administration to maintain power there. Now, we don't really know. We don't really know how this is going to happen. What's important, though, is that there are a number of stories that are out there right now that show that Iran's leadership over Syria is fragile, extremely fragile, more fragile than it was 6 months ago. And really, in a turn of fate, it all happened because the Iranians invited the Russians in. But I'm going to let you in on a little secret here. Neither Russia or Iran are prophesied to end up in control of Syria. That's something you won't read anywhere. When we come back, we're going to let you know what the Bible says about this and who will eventually rule over Syria.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The King of the South is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the Literature tab to select your free booklet.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, I'll tell you, this is all tied into Bible prophecy. And really, what is happening in Egypt and Libya. And yet we've said for years that Syria is going to break, probably, there's strong indication of that in the scriptures, in Psalm 83, to be specific, that Syria would pull away from the Iranian orbit and go another direction, and that's what's happening. It appears very, very much right now on the world scene. And we prophesied that many years ago, well over 20 years ago.
So that was Gerald Flory on the Key of David program back in 2012 when nobody was talking about Syria falling out of the Iranian orbit. Nobody but us. And we were quoting something or talking about a prophecy that we made 20 years ago. 20 years ago, that Syria would not belong to Iran. Well, in case you missed that quote, if you're just tuning in, here's another one from that same year.
But this Psalm 83 indicates that Syria is going to have a break with Iran, that they're going to break away. Now, you don't see much of that in the headlines today, but you do see enough violence there to see where it might be able to do that. But most people don't draw that conclusion. We do because we've been prophesying it for, well, close to 20 years now.
Syria will break away from Iran. You don't see that in the headlines today. That's what he said back in 2012, and you don't. You didn't see that in the headlines in 2012. You see it in the headlines today, 4 years, 5 years later. Now, if that doesn't give you tingles, I don't know what will. I mean, how do we know that was going to happen? How did we know that Iran was going to lose out in Syria? We didn't know Russia was coming in. That's not in the Bible, as we'll cover, that Russia was going to come in, but we knew that Iran was going to lose out. Now, he based that, Gerald Flory based that prophecy off one found in Psalm 83. One found in Psalm 83, and I'd just like to quote the first couple of verses of this psalm. It says this, "Keep you not silence, O God, hold not your peace, and be not still, O God, for lo, your enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people Israel and have consulted against the hidden or sheltered ones." So this prophecy, again, 2,700 years ago, 2,800 years ago, probably something in that range, was given. And it's talking about an alliance that's coming together and that will take crafty counsel against your people Israel. The Jews in the Middle East, the United States, Britain. There is an alliance that's growing in the Middle East that has a hatred for those peoples. Now, if you're unsure of who Israel is in Bible prophecy, you need to get the United States and Britain in prophecy. Read it. It's free. It will make your Bible come alive like no, at least the prophecy of it, come alive like no other book on the planet. I'm going to read verse 4 now. It says this, "They have said," that is this confederacy, these ones that are taking counsel how to destroy Israel, "Come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance." They want Israel to be wiped off the map. They don't even want the world to remember the name Israel. So who are these nations? Who are these nations that are going to come together against Israel in this end time? And we know that this hasn't happened before. This prophecy is not dual, as a lot of prophecy is. This hasn't happened anciently. These nations have never got together anciently to fight against Israel. It remains, if you believe in Bible prophecy, to happen. And it talks about an alliance. I'll read verse 5-8. It says, "For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against you." And it lists them, the tabernacles of Edom, the Ishmaelites, of Moab, the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher also is joined with them. They have holpen the children of Lot, Selah. So there's a lot of ancient names there. And it's difficult sometimes to trace them of who those people are today. But we have a reprint article about this, about the Psalm 83 Alliance that goes into who these people are. And you can read that to do the back study yourself. But one of those nations that were mentioned were the Hagarenes. The Hagarenes, they anciently dwelt in the land of Syria today. So we can't be sure that all of Syria, people inside Syria's borders are the Hagarenes. Yet we know that the majority of Syria is going to be part of this alliance that seeks to destroy Israel. Well, Iran seeks to destroy Israel. So why isn't it part? Is Iran part of this alliance as well? Does that mean that they won't be part of an Iranian-led attack on Israel? Well, there is another alliance in the Middle East you've probably heard about in this program called the King of the South. And that's led by Iran. And that's a counter-alliance to this alliance. And that includes Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia, Iraq, but not Syria. And it is from this prophecy that 20 years ago, Gerald Flurry could write that Iran is not going to control Syria, that Syria is going to fall out of the Iranian orbit. I wonder, Sam, if we can just play one of those clips again, just to reinforce this.
Well, I'll tell you, this is all tied into Bible prophecy. And really, what is happening in Egypt and Libya. And yet we've said for years that Syria is going to break, probably, there's a strong indication of that in the scriptures, in Psalm 83, to be specific, that Syria would pull away from the Iranian orbit and go another direction. And that's what's happening. It appears very, very much right now on the world scene. We prophesied that many years ago, well over 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. And that's what we're seeing in the news right now. But if we look even closer into this prophecy, we see that there is one, in Psalm 83, there is one nation that is not from the Middle East. Not anymore, at least. They've traveled, they've migrated, and that is the nation of Asher. Now, is Asher Russia? No, it's not. Russia is not Asher. Asher is modern Germany. So from all this prophecy, and this is taking it a step further than commentators will state today, they can see that Iran, or that Syria, is falling out of the Iranian orbit, but who would they say is going to control Syria? Well, it must be Russia. And not guided by Bible prophecy, we would have to agree with them that it looks like it would be Russia that's going to control Syria. But your Bible says it's not even going to be Russia. Russia's just a tool. Russia's just a temporary thing inside Syria, at least according to your Bible. In the end, it's going to be a united Europe led by Germany, Asher, that's going to be the dominant force telling Syria to go. Now, telling Syria what to do. Now, if that sounds crazy, that Germany is going to get involved, perhaps moving Russia out of the way to get involved there. If that sounds crazy, I mean, it sounded crazy 4 years ago that Syria was going to fall out of Iran's orbit. But we're seeing that happen right now. So don't be too sure that the Bible isn't an up-to-date book, that it doesn't concern the time you're living in right now. It's right on. It's right on. It even tells us the future of what's going to happen in Syria. In some ways, I mean, it's told us what we're seeing right now, but it tells us, yeah, exactly what's coming up. Now, we're going to go back. We're going to go back to 1958 now. This is written in The Plain Truth, What's Behind the Arab Crisis. The Plain Truth is the forerunner to the Philadelphia Trumpet. And this is what is written back then. And it's particularly of note because Russia was actually the power involved in Syria at the time. And they're referring to this same prophecy in Psalm 83. And it's talking about who is Asher. Who is Asher? It says, Germany is Asher. And then it says, quote, from 1958, so Germany, not atheistic communist Russia, is ultimately going to support an Arab Union against the Jews in Israel, Britain, and America. That's what this prophecy foretells. So we can bring that right up to the current day. It's more actually applicable right now in Syria. People out there are saying that Syria, yeah, Russia might take control there. But who in the world is saying Germany is going to take control over Syria? Well, we are. We are. Now continue to watch Syria. Watch how it's going to be stripped out of the hands of Iran. Watch that happen. And know where you heard that first. You heard it here. But also, be one step ahead. Know that even Russia is not the future power dominating Syria. That's going to fall to Germany. Now, this isn't an intellectual discussion. This isn't about getting excited about knowing what's going to happen next. Knowing the accuracies of Bible prophecy and seeing them come to pass speak to the infallibility of the Bible. And also the power that the living God has to intervene in human affairs to bring about such things from 2,700 years ago. Now, if you want the backstory on more of these prophecies, if you want to guide your knowledge of end time events leading right to the return of Jesus Christ, the Middle East is definitely a place to watch. There's a number of things that have happened. There's a number of things that are yet to happen. And if you want to delve into this more so you can get excited about it and develop a relationship with this great God that brings these things to about, request King of the South. King of the South, a book by Gerald Flurry, where when he says, we've been saying this for 20 years about Syria falling out of Iran's orbit, that's where he said it 20 years ago. Okay, you've been listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show this Friday. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you, Stephen Flurry, for allowing me to take the show. He will be back with you on Monday. Everybody listening, have a great weekend.